Good morning. You're listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And welcome and good morning. I'm Harry Miller.
And I'm Debbie Verney.
And Debbie and I are two of the partners at the Herzog Law Firm. We have three offices in the area. We have our main office, which is at Corporate Woods here in Albany. We have a office in Saratoga Springs at 47 West Harrison Street. And we have an office in Kingston, New York, down the river a little bit, at 1155 Flatbush Avenue. And welcome. Welcome. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. I got to do the last radio show of 2018 and the first one of 2019.
You have been on almost every week for a month, huh?
Yeah, I know.
Wow.
How'd that happen?
We must be, you must have done something bad.
I got a cold in my stocking.
No, actually, as an honor, it's really fun to do the show. I mean, it's really, you know, people always say, oh, if you want to take a week off, I'll do the show for you this week. We have, you know, the group of the four or five of us that do the show. It's really neat. So, and Ben tells me we have a new expanded audience in the North Country. Is that correct?
We do. We'd like to welcome our North Country listeners who can now hear Magic on 1410 AM and 96.9 FM. So up in the Lake George, Saratoga, Lake George, Glens Falls region, now you can get Magic up there. So they're all listening to our show this morning.
Great. And welcome.
Because Saratoga, sometimes it was kind of iffy, you know, the signal.
Yeah, so it shouldn't be iffy anymore. And like Harry was saying before the show this morning, you do seminars up in Glens Falls. So in that region, now that people can hear us strong up there, and we get some calls from up there, it'll be great.
It's
great. Probably have one, I think in February we have one up at the Queensbury Hotel. I'll have to check into that.
There we go.
We do a number of them each year. So welcome. If you're a new listener to the show, welcome. The Estate Medicaid Planning Hour has been on for a long, 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 long time. I don't even know. I think going back at least 30, 35 years.
So you take like 10 years per long, long time. Long time.
We started this show. You know, our retired partner, Sean Kopp, started this show probably in the late 1970s. It's got to be late 70s, early 80s. And it's been going on ever since then. We are primarily an estate planning, elder law, Medicaid asset protection planning law firm. We do the show each Saturday morning where we invite your calls here at Magic 590 and all those other stations that Ben already mentioned. The number here in the studio is 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. If you're outside the toll-free area, because I don't know where it ends up north there, you could reach us toll-free at 1-800-WROW-590. And we'd love to have some questions. If you have a question about estate planning, wills, trusts, Medicaid, Medicare, you know, taxes and stuff like that, we're all, you know, we talk about those things. We'll try to help you answer your questions. It's the first of the year, so people are going to start doing their income taxes pretty soon. You're going to get all of your 1099s, your W-2s, and your whatever's in
your
the
whatevers.
Mail.
What? Your whatevers?
Your whatevers in the mail. Depends how sophisticated your income is. Most of us have fairly simple income. It's either from, you know, earnings from wages, Social Security, pension income, IRA distributions, interest, dividends, capital gains, the vast majority. And we have a new, you know, there's a new
new tax law.
The new tax law, which was passed by Congress last year, is in effect now, was last year for the whole calendar year 2018. So doing your tax return is probably going to be, I don't know, maybe a little easier because everybody, if you're a married couple filing jointly, you have a standard deduction now of $24,000 a couple. If you're filing single, you have a $12,000. So, you know, a lot of people will not be itemizing this year who itemized in the past, because unless you have more than $24,000 of itemized deductions, there's no particular benefit in itemizing.
True.
So a lot of those people, you know, like if you don't have a mortgage on your, you know, the big itemized deductions are mortgage interest and the so-called SALT deductions, S-A-L-T, which is state and local taxes, which are in high tax states like New York, we are being penalized, that those are capped at $10,000 per year. And so if your property taxes and your school taxes and your state income taxes add up to more than $10,000, which for many of us who are still working, they do, the most you can deduct on your federal taxes is $10,000.
When you said salt, all I could think of was like Syracuse because it's the salt city, you know?
Is it really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yes. Wow. The Syracuse Orange were really originally the Saltine Warriors.
How did it get called the Salt City?
I have no idea.
Oh.
I just, you know, it's like I get this little bit of trivia. It's like, what can I say? So, we need some callers. The phone number here is 518-476-5900, 518-476-5900, or toll free at 1-800-WROW-590. And I'm going to research that as you tell them about the seminars.
Well, we have January. it's the first, the beginning of 2019. And in about 10 days or less, we got some seminars coming up the week of January 16th and 17th. We have a seminar Wednesday, January 17th, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, over at the Glenn Sanders Mansion in Scotia. You all know where that is. We have one on the 15th. Wait a second. I forgot the 15th. Tuesday the 15th, also 2 o'clock in the afternoon. We're going to be at the Stabers Suites, which is off of Wolf Road, right across from Macy's in Colony Center, right across the Macy's parking lot.
There's a from the men's department.
The lovely hotel. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the men's department. And that's a 2. Thursday, the 17th of January, we're going to be at 10 a.m. We'll be in the courtyard by Marriott. That is on Washington Avenue, 1455 Washington Avenue, right across from the State University. And lastly, the same day, the 17th of January, which is a Thursday, at 2 o'clock that afternoon, we will be in Clifton Park at the Hampton Inn. So that being the case, if you want to come to the seminars, a chance to meet us, introduce yourselves, get some probably a little more detailed information than we can give you on the radio show, and learn about the things you ought to be thinking about. You can make a reservation for the seminars either on our website, which is herzoglaw.com, or you can call the office at 518-465-7581 and leave a message in the general voicemail or on Stacy's voicemail, which is extension 126.
Okay, so it says, Syracuse earned the nickname of Salt City because of its salt mines. It says that's a myth. It says the fact is Syracuse never had salt mines. Rather, Syracuse's prosperous salt industry was due to its salt springs.
Oh.
It says the salt springs were mainly located at the southern end of the Onondaga Lake.
So they were like, were there spas there? Like, I mean, the mineral springs in Switzerland and Germany. And then have you ever been to the hot springs in Iceland? In Iceland, they have these warm
I've seen them.
Springs. You can the water's incredible there, and almost all the heat is geothermal. It's all geothermal heat, and it's wonderful for your skin. You know.
They have all the springs in Saratoga you can go to, but they're not like hot springs.
Right.
They have all the baths and stuff that you could do.
But they're salts. That's salt. Yeah, and sort of salty stuff. I don't know.
I don't know. So, this week I got a call. Actually, yesterday. From someone that said that they thought that their husband was the beneficiary of a person's trust. And they thought that we did his estate planning. And so they wanted to know if, in fact, they were going to get anything. So she said he passed away in June. She goes, and before he passed away, he told my husband that there was something in his estate plan for him. And so I said, okay. And then I told her that if there was a will that had to be probated, right, that they could go to the county clerk and they could find out if the person left them anything. And they probably would have received notice that they left them something. But if they had a trust, that's totally private.
It wouldn't necessarily. Yeah, you don't have to file it any place to execute the provisions.
Right. And I told her that, you know, I'd love to help her out, but that, you know, if in fact that person was our client, I wouldn't be able to tell her anything about it.
Anyway.
You know, and she said, well, the niece was the trustee. And I said, well, that probably were, you know, where you should start. You should probably call the niece.
This was a guy's wife?
The guy's wife called me that the guy that died had told him that he got something. So the guy that died told her husband that he was going to get something underneath his will. So the husband's
now,
still...
Oh, I got it.
Sorry, I confused you. It's still early.
I got it. But they weren't related to each other. Oh,
nope.
Okay.
Just friends.
Right. So he wouldn't... Even if there was a probate proceeding, he wouldn't have gotten notice. Although if he was a beneficiary, he would have gotten a copy of the will.
Right.
A notice of probate, yeah. But, yeah, it's we can't just reveal... You can't just call our office and find out what's in your mom's will. Because we're not allowed to tell you that unless she gives us permission to do that.
Exactly.
You know, you're not our client. Your mom is. And anything she tells us or is in her estate planning documents is confidential unless she chooses to share it with other people. Right?
True. True. Which is why a lot of people do trusts. Because
exactly.
It's private.
They are private. In addition to avoiding probate and being a lot... quicker, easier, and less expensive to distribute when a person passes away, nobody gets to see what's in your trust unless you want them to.
No, definitely not. And it's a lot harder to contest.
It is. It is because it forces the burden. When your property goes through a will, you got to file the will in court, wherever court you where you lived, in the county you lived, when you died, and everybody who would have inherited your estate if you didn't have a will has to get a copy of it by law before you can probate the will. And if you're not in it, some people file a will contest. You know, they object. They file what are called objections. They tell the person that they don't think they had the mental capacity to make a will or that they were subject to fraud and undue influence. And all you got to do is get somebody to file the objections. Now the executor has to tie up everything. You're going to have hearings and all these different examinations of the witnesses and things like that, which is very time-consuming and very expensive. So it doesn't mean you can't challenge a trust, but the big advantage is the person who wants to challenge the trust, they're the one that's going to pony up the money first.
Exactly.
They're going to have to hire a lawyer, probably give him or her a pretty hefty retainer, And then, most will contests are not successful.
No.
They are rarely successful. They are always expensive. But it's a far better way to go, because you're forcing this person who wants to object to the will to basically put their money where their mouth is. And if you really... So you're going to cut out a lot of, you know, sort of foolish, frivolous types of objections that are just designed to create delay and expense. I think.
Yeah, definitely. Another thing, I wrote these down because I thought they were kind of interesting this week.
Cool.
I had another client that came in that her husband's in the hospital right now, and they did their trust over 5 years ago, and he's in the hospital. He's going to be going out to rehab, but he will probably go home, and they're probably going to look for community Medicaid, and then he may end up transitioning over to the nursing home, depending on how he's doing.
Right.
And when they came in over 5 years ago, I told them to put their life insurance policies in the trust. Told them to put, you know, make the trust the owner and the beneficiary, so that if someone had to go into a nursing home, that cash value wouldn't be counted as an asset. And she did that. They had three policies. And she said she was talking to one of her friends that also had a trust that
sure.
we didn't do.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, well, you know, I went to this seminar. And at the seminar, I asked them the question about that. And they said, oh, no, we never do that.
Really?
So it was another law firm that said, no, we never do that. We don't ever put life insurance in there. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, no. First of all, it's so simple to do, because all you need to do is get a change of ownership form and a change of beneficiary form from the insurance company. You fill it out, sign it, send it in, and poof, it's in the trust. And a lot of people are not aware of the fact that the cash value of the insurance is just like money in the bank.
Exactly.
When you apply for Medicaid. And so if you have a, you know, $25,000 or $50,000 life insurance policy that has a $15,000 cash value, when you run out of money, you may have to cash in the policy and spend the cash value, which creates, first of all, you lose the death benefit if you do that.
Right.
And secondly, we eliminate a potential asset for a surviving spouse, which is needed. So
a lot of times we'll have to take loans out against them to reduce the cash value.
Well, that's better than cashing it in, because if you borrow out the cash value, at least you don't lose the death benefit. You know, if you surrender the policy, it's gone.
Right. So if you make the trust the owner and the beneficiary, then let's just say worst case scenario, you have one spouse that's the well spouse that's still living outside and the other person's in the nursing home and you haven't changed beneficiaries or anything like that. Mm-hmm. You still have the spouse that's in the nursing home as a beneficiary. You pass away. Then all of a sudden they're getting all this money. They're going to get kicked off Medicaid. Whereas if the trust was the owner and the beneficiary, not only have you protected the cash value, but then when the person passes away, that money goes back into the trust and stays in there till the person in the nursing home passes, and then it goes out to the beneficiaries.
Yeah, and when you collect the insurance, when you actually collect the policy, you don't have to start the 5 years again either. Mm-hmm. Because if you put the policy in 5 years ago, now the person died and you collect the $50,000, $100,000, that money is immediately protected. You don't have to wait five more years.
I've also had, kind of talking about the five-year look back, I've had people that their parents have trusts, and parents are still alive, and they come in and they say, I want a trust like mom and dad's, and then they want mom and dad's trust, their benefits under mom and dad's trust to pay into their trust, as opposed to paying to them outright, because there's no look back for that. So,
right. I've done that recently. Actually, I did it with a client who had a very valuable piece of land, probably worth $500,000-$600,000. Mm-hmm. Okay, and his daughter and her husband set up a trust, and they had their house in the trust, and that was the primary asset that they had. So, as part of the estate plan, we had Dad amend his trust. Mm-hmm. So when he passed away, the land went right from his trust to his daughter's trust. No waiting period.
Right. It makes total sense.
The daughter and her husband aren't making the transfer. It's coming from Dad's estate, so it doesn't affect... It's not subject to a five-year look-back because they're not the people who are transferring the property to the trust. And we saved immediately a very valuable asset.
Yeah, and that's the thing we look at whenever people come in to sit down with us and talk about estate planning, is we try to encompass everything. It's kind of like going to the doctor. We want to make sure that, you know, we get a little bit of family history. We want to know what's going on to make sure that we can make your plan special for you.
We kind of give you an estate planning wellness check.
That's it.
We want to see how well your estate plan is.
Because, exactly.
I mean, some of them are, you know, I mean, you say it, but some people come in and they really think they're covered. They really think they have a good estate plan. And, you know, the problem is I had this happen this week. A couple came in and they had an estate plan. It was probably overly complicated. But for the time they did it, it wasn't, because there were tax issues. There were estate tax issues, you know, 20 years ago that don't exist today for many people. And so we were able to simplify the plan. And also, they hadn't really looked at it in 15 or 20 years. So you shouldn't wait 15 years to review your estate plan.
Another thing that happened this week is I had a situation where husband and wife, they named each other as powers of attorney, and then they named the kids as backups. And they said, we don't want the kids to sign right now. We want you to hold the powers of attorney. And so husband passed away, and the wife came in, and we went over her estate plans, and I said, your kids need to sign the power of attorney now because your husband is deceased.
Right.
Or they can't act. And then I told her, probably your best bet is to actually redo your power of attorney so that they wouldn't have to furnish a death certificate to prove that they are actually, you know, because they're going to have to sign something anyway. You may as well update your documents so that they're in the number one position on your power of attorney and your healthcare proxy. And she really never even realized that was an issue. She just figured, you know, whatever, they'll just go in and say that they're in charge.
Well, except that's fine, and they all know that, but the people at the bank don't know that.
Exactly.
And so you show up at the bank or at a brokerage firm with a power of attorney that has your deceased husband on as the primary agent and your son and daughter as the secondary, and the first thing the bank is going to need to have is proof that he has, in fact, died. And so now you got to go home and get the... And if you don't have any death certificates left, you got to go down to the city vital statistics office or wherever the person died and get the death certificate. It's easier to just rerun the document, take the deceased person's name off of it, and we're good to go.
Yeah, I mean, with the healthcare proxy and power of attorney especially, the will, it really doesn't matter because you've always got backups. But if you're going to be using a document that's you're going to use. I mean, your healthcare proxy, every time I go into the doctors now, they're like, do you have a healthcare proxy? Can we scan it into the file? And that's what I always say to my clients after we execute them is, as soon as you're done with this, next time you go to the doctors, have them scan it into your file so that they have it.
And it'll be there. It'll be part of your medical record.
Right, and you need that there. That way, in case something happens, I know that in Saratoga now, like when I go to the doctors, they ask if they can upload everything to the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently it's all cloud-based out there so that supposedly if I was rushed to Saratoga Hospital, they would be able to pull all my records down from the cloud.
Well, they do, and I think what's happening, recently when I've gone to the doctor for a variety, I've had some sinus problems, so I've been going to a ENT, and they have you sign these forms now, which basically authorizes them to share your medical information with other institutions,
right.
other doctors, other hospitals. And so, you know, if you were, you know, if you're out in Missouri visiting your mom, for instance, and you got sick, they could ship all your stuff out there by computer, and you wouldn't have to, first of all, it would probably avoid having a half a dozen tests.
True, true. That's very
other
true.
Things. So listen, let's get a couple of calls in here. People are sleeping this morning, huh?
That's it. It's rainy.
518-4. It is a rainy, damp day.
Mm-hmm.
But the good news is it's not snowing. We don't have to shovel the rain.
Right, but it's icy. It's very icy up in Saratoga.
I know, but it'll melt.
I know.
The sun comes out. Isn't it supposed to clear later, Ben?
No.
Oh.
Not today.
Unless you're today,
Lake George. It's sunny in Lake George.
Yes.
I heard him say that.
If you're north of Saratoga, Glens Falls, Lake George, it's okay.
So
okay,
that's where
then.
We should go then. Yeah.
Well, then let's head up. Once we get through the ice.
Get through the ice in Saratoga to get there. Yeah.
Okay, 518-476-5900 is our number here. If you'd like to call, say good morning. You've got a question on your mind you'd like to talk about. And the toll-free number, for those of you outside the local calling area, is 1-800-WROW-590. Hey, you know, the new Medicaid numbers are out. Mike Luisi gave them to me yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
The regional rate for we talk about the five-year look back, and the five-year look back is when you transfer property into a Medicaid trust or to your children. If you do it within 5 years of applying for Medicaid, it can have an effect. It will have an effect on your eligibility, okay? Because the transfer will create a penalty. And the penalty is dividing the regional rate in the capital district by the amount of money you transferred. So this year, it is 2019, in the Northeastern, which is the capital district and a whole bunch of other counties, it's a little over $11,000 a month. It's $11,280, all right? There's actually six or seven regions in New York State. The highest region is Long Island, where it's about $13,500 a month. New York City is $12,400. So as you see, as you go further down the river, it's and these rates are supposed to represent the average cost of a nursing home in the Capital District. If any of you know of a nursing home where you can get there for $11,000 a month, let me know, because I have some clients who might want to move
exactly.
their family members to that facility. They're more closer to 15, I think 14, 15 is more average, but these figures come from the New York State Health Department, and they also contain a lot of outlying counties like Essex, Franklin, Delaware, you know, Hamilton, Montgomery, Otsego, where costs are somewhat lower than they are right here in the immediate capital region. So that's the situation with that. Also, the annual gift tax exclusion this year remains at $15,000.
Right.
The annual gift exclusion is the amount of money you can give away to each person in a single calendar year without filing a gift tax return and reporting it to the IRS.
But that's different for DSS.
Yes.
IRS says you can give $15,000 to anybody you want
without paying a gift tax.
And it's fine. They don't care.
But
DSS says, but for you gave away that 15 grand, you could have paid for your care for a month and a half. So therefore, we're going to treat it like you still have.
At $11,400 a month, you're going to be penalized for a little over a month.
Well, they're going to round it up.
Right.
Mm-hmm. To 2 months.
So there you go. And so that's the difference. And it's probably one of the most commonly confused areas where people have given away money to their children. Now they have to apply for Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
For Medicaid, chronic care Medicaid in a nursing home. Those transfers within 5 years will be penalized. Okay?
But not for community Medicaid.
Right. So those of you who are not familiar with the home care programs for the community Medicaid system should start learning about these things, because there is home care available through the Medicaid system. It can be obviously done right in your home. It can also be done by people that you know and you hire, including family members. If you have folks in your family or friends or neighbors who are willing to do that and provide care to you, they can be paid by Medicaid to take care of you. They're also can access care through standard agencies and things like that. And all these transfer things that Debbie and I have been talking about, they don't matter for home care. You could transfer all your money to a trust in January, and you could apply for home care on February 1st if you're eligible. So keep that in mind. It's a really, because it's, first of all, everybody wants to stay home.
Definitely. I mean, I don't want to go into a nursing home.
Me either.
And now there are some assisted living. We had our Medicaid meeting yesterday, where we get together with all of the Medicaid paralegals and with Kim Hance, our geriatric care manager, and kind of go over the new trends and what's happening and stuff like that. And there's actually some assisted living places now.
ALPS, they're called, aren't they?
Yes.
ALPS. Assisted living programs.
That are going to take community Medicaid.
Yes. Yes. There's a new facility. I don't know.
Promenade.
It's out Western Avenue, mm-hmm. past the State University, I think. It's before you get to, Stuyvesant Plaza. And they have, I don't think they're open yet, but they are taking
reservations.
And I believe it's about a 240 or 250 bed facility. And I think about 70 or 80 of those beds are community Medicaid beds, which means you could go there and have the Medicaid system cover your cost if you're otherwise eligible and receive. It's the difference here is it's not a nursing home. It's not a nursing home. It's an assisted living facility.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a much less restrictive environment than a nursing home. But at the same time, you'll be getting certain levels of care, meals, transportation services, services within the facility itself, and all of that can be covered under the Medicaid system.
Yeah, and we'll talk some more about that, and we'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, and Flatbush Road in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, Harry, or Debbie, please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131. Or our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And welcome back. I'm Harry Miller.
And I'm Debbie Verney.
And Debbie and I are two of the partners with the Herzog Law Firm. We are here for the second half of the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour, which comes to you each Saturday morning here at Magic 590, 100.5 FM, and now also at 1410 AM and 96.9 FM up in...
Up north.
Saratoga, Glens Falls, Lake George area.
All right.
There you go.
So welcome, if you're one of our new listeners up there. Welcome to the show. We talk about issues relating to estate planning, elder law. We are elder lawyers, not elderly lawyers.
Well, speak for yourself.
I
know.
Cut to the quick. Okay, then.
I bet. Sorry.
And, you know, beneficiary designations, healthcare proxies and powers of attorney, which we were just talking about in the first half hour here, all of those things that people procrastinate about, put off until another day. It is the new year, and if you didn't make any resolutions and you haven't done an estate plan or you haven't looked at the one you have in 5 or 10 years, maybe you ought to treat yourself to a New Year's resolution and call our office and set up a complimentary appointment with either Debbie, myself, Jane Marie Schaefer, or Dave Kabikian, and come on in and we'll look at what you have, or if you don't have anything, we'll talk about what you might consider putting in place, and all of our initial consultations, there is no charge for the initial consultation. Obviously, if we're going to do some work for you, going to hire us to be your lawyer, we're going to charge you a fee, but you're going to know up front what the fee is, what it covers, what it includes, and all of our retainers are done through written retainer agreements, so there are no hidden fees or hidden charges that are not fully disclosed to you up front, and then you'll make up your mind whether or not you want to use us.
It's true, and we have seminars coming up. We have seminars, we have one Tuesday, January 15th at 2 in the afternoon at 39 Wolf Road at Staybridge Suites. That's right, Colony Center right across from Macy's. Wednesday, January 16th at 2 in the afternoon, that's at Glenn Sanders Mansion, 1 Glen Avenue in Scotia. Thursday, January 17th at 10 in the morning at Courtyard by Marriott at 1455 Washington Avenue. Well, by that time for me, it's afternoon. What can I say? And then Thursday, the 17th at 2 in the afternoon at the Hampton Inn, 620 Plank Road in Clifton Park. And Thursday, January 31st at 2 in the afternoon at the Courtyard by Marriott at 500 Frank Sotiel Boulevard in Kingston. Mm-hmm. So I had the same New Year's resolution for at least 5 or 6 years that I haven't done.
Which is?
Learn how to parallel park. So instead, I got a car that does it for me.
Mine does too. have you used it?
Once.
The problem is you hardly ever go anywhere where you parallel park anymore. You know, everything. And now you live in Saratoga Springs, so that's a little different because you actually, if you drive down Broadway or one of those streets, there actually are parallel parking spaces.
Yes.
And it's really weird because, you know, you push this button and the car takes over. The wheel starts turning, but your hands aren't on it.
Uh-huh.
And it does a better job than you or I could do. I'm pretty sure of that.
Well, I've only used it once. I experimented with it once and it wasn't parking on a street. I was at a friend's house and there were two cars in her driveway. They were parked far enough apart so that I could test it out. So, but it worked.
Oh, yeah. And you drive past the space you want to park in, and it beeps or something.
Well, I get an arrow
because
online,
first of all, it measures whether the space is large enough to put the car in, and if it isn't, it won't beep. And then I don't even remember. I haven't used it in so long. It's a neat little feature that, you know, it's one of those bells and whistles that probably you hardly ever use, but it's fun. You know, when you go to the Price Chopper, you just pull in the space or the mall.
Exactly. So, but that's been my New Year's resolution for several years, and I finally just solved it. I just can't. I mean, I used to have a Miata, and it would have been easier for me to get out of the car and lift it and put it in the spot than it would for me to parallel park it.
Uh-huh.
And you know how tiny those are. I can't do it. I just mentally, I can't parallel park. So now I have a car that does it.
Congratulations. You have arrived.
I have, you know. So give us a call at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900 or 1-800-WROW-590. The other thing I had come up this week is joint tenants. So I had a client that she has a trust. She has her house and some other stuff in her trust, and she has a significant other. They've been together for probably about 15 years.
Okay.
And they went down to Florida, and they bought a Florida property, right? And she and he bought it jointly, and I said, well, how is it titled? And, you know, is it joint tenants? You know, are there rights to survivorship? What happens when one of you passes away? And she said that she thought it was going to pass to each other whenever one of them passed away. And I said, I really need to look at it. And she said, well, what would happen if I guess he put up more of the money for the Florida property than she did. Mm-hmm. And she goes, well, what would happen if I went into a nursing home? And I said, well, your half of the Florida property would be available to pay for your care. And then she said, well, what if I put in my trust? And I said, well, if you put it in your trust, that would sever, if it had rights to survivorship, it would sever
the survivorship, right?
Right.
But it would protect her half.
Right. So, you know, it's one of those things I'm like, I really do need to look at the deed.
People have no idea how they're, because there are literally at least three different ways of jointly owning property.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you can own it in common, as tenants in common, which usually, like if a brother and sister inherited a property from mom or dad, they would want to own it as tenants in common and not have a survivorship right. That way, if the sister dies, her half will go to her husband or her kids or wherever right. She wants, and the same with her brother. Now, if you're married, most married people want survivorship rights. Now, that's called a tenancy by the entirety. It's
right.
A special joint tenancy for married people only, and that can't be severed by a deed from one person. They have to have a deed from both of you to convert it to a tenancy in common. Plain old joint tenancy with rights of survivorship, which may be with the significant others,
right?
Maybe not. Since they're not married, if she deeded her half to the trust, poof, no more survivorship rights.
Exactly.
Yeah. David in Kingston's online. Hey, good morning, David.
Good morning, Harry. Good morning, Debbie.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm kind of calling mid-program, so I'm not sure if this topic was just previously discussed or not.
That's okay.
Excuse me. My question is, actually, I'm calling for a family member. Recently married, the gal that he married was a widow with two children. Currently, she had a house from her previous marriage. And as the deed stands now, he is not
mm-hmm.
part of the deed.
Right.
I don't know the wording of the deed. She has two children.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, if something should happen to her, she passes, what would be the rights of her husband, even though he's not listed on the deed, as far as inheritance concerning the house and property?
Well, I'm assuming they didn't do a prenuptial agreement before they got married, which would have been probably the smartest way to address these issues up front. But if they didn't do that, I mean, obviously, he is, as a surviving spouse, he has what's called a right of election against her estate. But he would have really no particular rights in the house. In other words, the house would simply be another asset of the estate. If her will left everything to her children and nothing to him, he could elect against the will. And basically, he's entitled to, what's the elective share? It's a third of the net estate. So if her total estate was $300,000, including the value of the house, he could elect against the will, and at some point he'd get basically $100,000, all right? It's not, the calculation is a little more complicated than that, but that's the general idea. But he couldn't necessarily say, I want to stay in the house. I mean, if he wanted to buy the house from the kids or whoever was getting it, they could probably arrange that. It depends. There are often... It depends on the dynamics of those relationships. Very often, there are strained relations between second spouses and children from the first marriage. In a lot of my estate plans, because this is not an unusual problem coming up. And in fact, I just did one recently for a couple, and they in fact have two houses. They have a house here in New York, and they have a house down in Florida. So. And they each, it's a second marriage. He has no children. She has children from previous marriage. So and she has these in a trust. So what her trust says, if she dies first, he can, if he wants to, he can keep one or both of the houses for a year. Mm-hmm. All right? As long as he pays the taxes, the insurance, the utilities. So he's got to pick up the charges, the ongoing charges. And then at some point within that year, if he wants to keep one of the houses, he can do that. And he can live there. The other house will be sold. The money will go to her kids. and vice versa. So there are a lot of different ways of working this out because, you know, we have a situation where the kids show up right after the funeral and say, hey, we want you out of here. We're putting the house on the market next week.
Right.
And that's a problem.
Yeah, I don't know the exact wording, excuse me, in the deed, but my recommendation was, you know, obviously he should, you know, give you folks a call. And
yeah, she could give him a life estate if she wanted to. She could give him a life estate in the house or a life use. It says if right. I die first, you can continue to live in this house if you choose to, as long as you pay the taxes, the insurance, the utilities, and all that stuff, routine maintenance. And then if you leave or you die, it gets right. sold and the money goes to my kids. You know, there. It depends on what they want, but there are a number of different ways to solve these problems. And that's the whole thing they ought to really focus on, because you don't want to leave it go. Because if you don't do anything, you're likely to have a family feud down the road that can easily be avoided.
Okay. Well, I'm trying to get him to attend. I believe you still have a January 31st seminar.
Yeah, it's the 31st. It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon up the courtyard by Marriott, up there on the hill there.
Right.
Up by the Hudson Valley Mall. Yeah.
Yes. I'm going to recommend that he attend, and he could, I imagine you certainly could address that question at that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, thank you both for taking my call.
No problem. Thanks for calling
thanks
in.
Thanks for listening.
That's a great question. Deeds are always exciting things to talk about.
It's funny how people don't know how their property is owned. They really don't. They mm-hmm. they think they do, and 9 times out of 10, they're wrong.
I know where mine is. It's in a revocable trust.
Mine, too.
There you go.
Mine, too. John in Waterville. Hey, good morning, John.
Good morning, John.
Good morning. I have a question on a trust.
Okay.
What about sign on a line of credit for my house, which is in my trust, the irrevocable trust?
Okay.
My wife and 2 children are trustees of the trust. Mm-hmm. And the bank wanted to know which trustee was going to sign for the trust. And I happened to mention that my wife had been dead for about 10 years. And one of my kids are going to sign for the trust.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned my wife was dead. They wanted a death certificate for her. And I can't figure out why, as long as I got other trustees. You got any reason for that?
Well, they want to make sure that if anything happened, that they have clear title. So they want to make sure that she is deceased, that, you know, you're not just mortgaging the property without her.
Mm-hmm.
So they just want a death certificate to make sure that they have all the backup that they need. But it totally makes sense, because there may be language in your trust that says that they can act severally or jointly. Is that why you're saying one or more of them can just sign as opposed to her?
Yeah, they can act independently.
Right, but they want to make sure that...
Why, if one of the kids were signing, why they needed something on my wife?
Well, they just want to make sure everything's up to snuff. You know, there's a lot of fraud out there, you know?
Yeah, a bank, if you're borrowing money from a bank and your trust is signing something... I don't care. Your trust may say that either trustee has the legal authority to sign. The bank's going to want all the trustees to sign just to cover their loan, because they don't want the other trustee coming back and saying, hey, I didn't sign this. I didn't know anything about this loan. The other one just went ahead and did it. So they want to make sure both the trustees sign, and if one of them's dead, they need to put a piece, you know, they want a copy of the death certificate to stick in the file someplace. So when the bank examiners come to review the loan papers from the, you know, from
exactly.
the FDIC or from the, you know, the, either the state or the federal banking regulators, they come in and look at these things from time to time, believe it or not.
Yeah, well, my kids are out of state, but they're only sending the papers to one of my children to sign. The other one, they didn't bother with.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, go figure. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, that's why I was wondering why they wanted the death certificate, and only one of them could sign, yeah.
Yeah, they just want proof. I mean, they want to paper their file. More is better at that point, you know, to make sure that they can say that they checked all the boxes.
Well, okay, thank you.
I guess so.
You're welcome. Have a great
weekend.
Thanks,
John. Take care.
We have another caller. We have Mary from Albany. Good morning, Mary. We don't have Mary from Albany.
Hello. All right.
We have David from Albany.
David, hi.
Yes, good morning. This is a follow-up to a question I asked, I think about two or three weeks ago, about hospice and if whether Medicare paid for hospice, not you know, while at home, but while actually in the hospice itself.
Yeah, hospice is a Medicare program, yes. is if you were in a hospice facility, I believe that would be. Now, if you're in a nursing home and receiving hospice care, which is also possible, or even in a hospital, I don't believe that Medicare would pay the cost of the nursing home bed. They would provide hospice services. But then there's a community hospice program.
Hospice, you know, a freestanding hospice, but you know, they I guess I was told by the hospice that they don't pay for room and board. I mean, Medicare doesn't pay for room and board, but then the insurance company says right. The original Medicare pays for it, but I didn't know exactly what original Medicare meant, and then that's where I was asking for some clarification.
Are they in a nursing home or a hospital?
It's actually a hospice.
They're in the hospice facility itself, right. Which is neither a nursing home or, yeah.
Correct.
I'm not sure, unless you have to be in, when they talk about original Medicare, that is standalone Medicare as opposed to an HMO, you know, a Medicare Advantage plan. Mm-hmm. So it could be that some of the Medicare Advantage plans don't fully cover all of those charges and that the standalone does. I'm not absolutely certain about the answer to that, but let me try to find out and let you know about that next week, because certainly at home, it would cover the full shot because people just come to your house. Obviously, there's no charge for the room. In the hospital, if you're in the hospital, I mean, your medical insurance, your Medicare or your supplemental would cover the hospital bed. So it's really in the community hospice facility itself and the nursing home environment that the issue comes up. I'm pretty sure Medicare does not cover the nursing home.
How would you go about applying for it?
Well, hospice is something, I mean, the doctor has to put you on a hospice. You basically, in someone who's on hospice, your physician has concluded that you are likely to die within the next 6 months.
That's what happened in this particular
case. That's a precursor to eligibility for hospice, and that has to be done by a physician, a licensed medical doctor.
That happened in this case.
Right, and then typically most of the person's meds are discontinued, and they're kept in, you know, what's called comfort care, hospice care. And frankly, if you're on hospice and you're at home, if something happens to you, they will not take you to the hospital, all right? They will bring in the visiting nurses. They will keep you comfortable and pain-free, but they won't take you to the hospital.
That's exactly what happened in this case,
yeah.
Also.
Now, what people ought to know out there, because I went through this personally with my own mother, is you can revoke hospice if you choose to, all right? The fact that you're on hospice doesn't mean that you can't go to a hospital if you revoke hospice. I had a situation with my mom where she was at home with caretakers, and the caretaker called me one morning and said she can't breathe. She's having trouble gasping for air and all of that stuff. And the visiting nurses were there. This was in Pennsylvania where she lived. But they're not going to take her to the hospital. Well, I talked to my sisters. I said, I don't know about that. I'm uncomfortable with that. My mother would not want to suffocate or you know, die from lack of oxygen. This is a woman who couldn't put her head underwater in the shower, you know, or in a swimming pool. And so I said, I revoked hospice. I said, take her to the hospital, get her stabilized, and then bring her home again, which is what they did. And then they put her back on hospice. And about 2 or 3 months later, she died quietly in her sleep, peacefully and pain-free. But I was her healthcare proxy, and I didn't feel comfortable doing that because I don't think my mother would have wanted to die that way.
I see a lot of similarities to this one. Yeah, I actually, when I called the insurance company, they gave me a number to call Medicare. I called that number last week, but there was no answer. I'm wondering if that's because of the government shutdown.
It could very well be because of the government shutdown is in effect. I mean, did you hear this? The IRS is collecting taxes. You have to pay your taxes, but if you're getting a refund, they're not issuing refunds while the government's shut down.
Yep.
Go figure that
one
out.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so you got to pay your taxes on April 15th, but if you're getting a refund, God knows when you'll ever get it.
Yep.
Interesting.
Well, again, I appreciate it. Again, it is a little bit confusing for sure, but I went on the Medicare website, and they did say it doesn't cover room and board for hospice care.
No, I don't think it does. I don't think it does. And I don't know. I don't know. That's probably comparable to a nursing home, I would guess, at least. It might be even more intensive.
Well, Medicaid won't pay for, they'll pay for hospice, but they don't pay for the room and board. So under the website, I basically Googled who pays for hospice, and it says it's a benefit under Medicare Part A. And mm-hmm. then it says hospice care, received non-curative medical support and psychosocial services to help cope with both symptoms and terminal disease. And it says the Medicaid hospice benefit is identical to the Medicare hospice benefit in both services and reimbursement.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's basically kind of what it says. There's not very helpful online either, but you're probably not getting an answer because of the shutdown. We're having issues with some of our real estate closings because they can't get the VA loans through. Because everything's right. shut down.
That's going to affect FHA and VA
mm-hmm.
mortgages, and things going to be a mess in about a month.
Yeah, well, I really do appreciate the show, and I listen regularly, so thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot.
Have a great weekend.
That's good to hear. Thanks very much. 476-5900, our number here, 518-476-5900. We got a couple of minutes left here in the show. What else is going on? Oh, you know what else went up? We're talking about the numbers. If you're very, very wealthy, the the estate tax rates have bumped up from $11.2 to $11.4 million a person. So the rich can continue to get richer.
Except in New York.
In a couple, $22.8 million. A married couple in all but about 17 states in this country can pass $22.8 million to their children tax-free and state tax-free. In New York, the basic exclusion amount in New York is $5,740,000. Not a shabby number, you know?
No.
A married couple in New York can pass $11.4 million, about half the federal rate, estate tax-free to other family members or people like that. So,
is Massachusetts still a million?
Yeah, Massachusetts is very, yeah. Massachusetts is not good, and I think Connecticut's by 2 million.
Yeah.
They're really almost Neanderthal in their estate taxes these days because there's only about 16 or 17 states that even have a state estate tax anymore.
Yeah, and New York, ours is indexed for inflation now, so it goes up every
it
year.
Is. It was 5.7. It was originally 5 million indexed mm-hmm. for inflation since 2010. So we're going into the ninth year now, or eight full years. So that was the inflation rates there. But... So, not a biggie for most of us. But the other thing you got to keep in mind, I'm telling you, even by people with not $11 million, but with several million dollars, is all of these estate tax rates and all these tax cuts and everything, they're temporary.
Right.
They're going to expire at the end of 2024, okay? So in 5 years, unless Congress changes the laws, that $11.4 million is going to drop back to 5.7, you know, it's going to drop back index for inflation, but it's going to be about half the previous rate, and all the tax rates will go back to where they were. So right now, the outlook for bipartisan cooperation at the federal level does not look promising.
No.
Chuck in Clifton Park, good morning.
Morning, Chuck.
How are you doing?
Good morning. My question is in regards to an irrevocable trust. If you have one in place and you have your principal residence as part of that trust, and it's been in there for a few years, and you buy a new home, you sell that one to buy a new one,
yep.
Does that five-year waiting period have to reset?
No, not if you do it correctly, no.
Well, we would do it through you, so.
Okay, well, then it'll be done correctly. Okay.
That's right.
So, okay. No, you're going to sell the house in the trust. You and your wife and your trustee are going to sell the house. They're going to all sign the deed and transfer it to whoever's buying it from you. The checks they write from the bank, from the mortgage or whatever, are going to be payable to the trust or endorsed to the trust. And then they're going to go into either a temporary bank account if there's a gap between the closing. And the new house, we want to take title directly in the name of your trust, not in your individual name. If you take title in your individual name to the new house, and then you transfer it to the trust, you've restarted the five-year look-back period as to the new house.
Okay.
So we want to make sure we take title to the new house in the name of the trust. The money from the sale comes from bank accounts that are in the name of the trust from the sale of the old house. Now the new house is immediately protected if the old house was in there for 5 years. If the old house was only in there for 3 years, you only have two more years to wait on the new house.
Oh, okay. That's good.
So it tacks on to the original transfer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So When you got to that point, you would be able to handle that portion.
Yeah, we do the closing. We do real estate closings. We don't just do wills and trusts. We do a lot of real estate closings for our clients, because we have clients who are buying and selling houses all the time.
Yeah.
In these trusts, and there's a lot of flexibility. I have clients who are, I have one right now who's selling her house in New York. She lives in Kingston. She's moving to Florida. She's selling her house here, and she's bought a place down in Florida. We're going to do the same thing. We're going to put the old house, we're going to sell it from the trust, we're going to take the new Florida house right in the name of her trust. She doesn't even have to do a new trust. Not just because she's moving it. She can use the same trust.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you and your program.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Thanks for listening.
That's why I always tell my clients, you don't have to use us for the closing. We do closings, but make sure that if someone else is doing your closing that they call us and make sure that everything's titled correctly, because the last thing we want to do is, after all these years, have your money exposed.
That's the problem. We're not offended if you're not going to use us to do the closing. We're not offended at all. But for heaven's sakes, call the office or have the lawyer call the office so they don't screw it up, all right? A lot of these lawyers are real good at doing single-family closings, but they don't know nothing about trusts. And if they screw it up and you get the deed, the new deed in your name, in your individual name, you've blown it. I don't care if it's only in there for a day. You can't fix it.
Or you cash the check.
Yeah.
Oh,
Or you take the check for the trust and you put it in your individual account. Boom.
It's over.
You've just blown 5 years of look back, and you're starting all over again.
So have a great weekend.
Talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.